As product managers, many of us share a challenging characteristic of our roles. We have enormous responsibility and no actual authority. By being responsible for that, those product improvements and new products that we create, we drive the future revenue of the organization. But without real authority, we have to use our influence to get things done. And creating a people-first culture that moves your team and organization towards excellence is how you gain powerful influence. Our guest knows a lot about crafting such a culture, and he is Gary Harpst, New York Times best-selling author. Gary is also a teacher, speaker, and builder of several businesses. His last book addresses culture and other aspects of effective leadership with a title that intrigued me, Built to Beat Chaos, Biblical Wisdom for Leading Yourself and Others. Let's jump in and learn to gain influence by constructing a people-first culture. Also, we created an article format of this discussion, which you'll find at productmasterynow.com/501.
How can you unlock your full potential as a product manager? We're sharing the product management insights you need. They are based on the 7 research-backed knowledge areas for product mastery. You'll learn to create products customers love, enhance your influence, and elevate your career. Welcome to Product Mastery Now, hosted by Dr. Chad McAllister, product management professor, practitioner, and your guide.
Gary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chad. I feel like I'm a soulmate of yours if I look at what you've been doing for the last 500 episodes.
That's very kind of you to have checked it out some. Glad to have come across your work too. And part of that soulmate is probably because you have a background in engineering as well, right?
Absolutely. And really, entrepreneurs, when they start a company, are in product management, whether they know it or not.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We have to create something that adds value to other people's lives, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And I love it.
It's a good thing. It's challenging. And as our product managers listening know, very challenging, but we do love it and love creating that value for others and being able to steer the ship, so to speak, at times. So on this people first culture aspect, it seems like, especially now as we're recording this, we're moving closer and closer to election time. It seems like all kinds of relationships are getting strained, right? Work relationships and personal relationships and the like. But we see this in society and workplaces. It doesn't look like we're getting better at this relationship thing. What do you think? What do you think about this, trying to put people first? Why are relationships getting messed up?
Well, I love your question, because way back in my very first college class, it was a sociology class a long time ago, that a professor asked a very similar question to you, and it set me on a journey. He said, why is it that mankind has progressed so far technologically? And at the time, we were deep into the moon landing and those kind of just incredible advancements. And he said, why have we progressed so much technologically and not at all socially? Hmm. And it's basically the same question. And if you look at history, we have the same things going on in our society that have gone on in many societies that have matured for a few hundred years. And so there's really kind of nothing new under the sun, so to speak, relationally. And we don't really, there's no evidence that we are progressing. So I'm not answering your question, you notice. I'm just piling on to your question. So in the last, 100 years, we've killed 150 million people in wars, et cetera. So we just have better technology to live out what's wrong with us. So that question actually set me on a journey of thinking about what does it mean to be human and why are we the way we are? And we can drill into this later, but, you know, really what do product managers do? They design things to accomplish some purpose and to fulfill some need. Mm-hmm. And I would just suggest that a designer should sometime think about why do they do what they do? Lift the question up to themselves and say, why are they designed the way they are? Mm-hmm. Here you are designing something for someone else, and you're not paying attention to yourself as being part of that equation. Why is it that you love to design things? Why do you love to build things? Why do you get satisfaction in building something that works? So that question from the sociologist set me on that journey of asking that question.
It's a good question. And given the subtitle of your book, Biblical Wisdom for Leading Yourself and Others, I like the There's Nothing New Under the Sun referenced King Solomon there in Ecclesiastes. And that seems to be true many of the time, right? We see progress, but not in everything. And we do as product people have to figure out how to gain our influence, use influence, right? And you talk a lot about a people-first culture, and that gets us moving in the right direction. And I'd like for you to take us through how we build such a thing. And I did see in your previous work, in your writings in the book, you have a 5-step model for that. And maybe that's a good thing to take us through, but wherever you want to start with that.
Well, yes, the latest book is broken into really 3 chunks. And it's the way I think about answering your question. What is the role of a leader? There are certain things a leader needs to know. There are certain things a leader needs to do, and most importantly, there's certain things that a leader needs to be. Mm. And if you take the old craftsman master model from the Middle Ages, you started cleaning up the shop when you're 8 or 9 years old, and you gradually just learned a little more and a little more. And to be a master, you had to be in that role for years to the point it became part of you. Whatever it is you were building or doing, it was not just an external thing that you learned and mechanically did. It became part of you. You mentioned muscle memory earlier in some of your work. And so this 5-phase step or the process that you mentioned is really the 3rd part of the book, which is what do you need to be? And it is framed, its source to me comes from biblical insights, and I just do a little bit of an aside. I'm sure all your listeners are not people of the same faith, but I would submit everybody has faith. They believe something. Mm-hmm. And their actions flow out of that something they believe, whether they know it or not. And so I find that I really enjoy talking to people that believe all kinds of things. Because in a sense, we're all united in that we're in a quest of trying to figure out what's true and then pursue it. And by the way, if we all do that, if we work hard to understand what we believe is true and start acting on it, we'll gradually figure out what's right and what's not, and we'll converge. Mm-hmm. So the 5 steps, I'm sorry for the long answer, that I'm an engineer, so I feel like, okay, I've got to give this foundation before I give you the answer to the 5 steps.
The first principles, we're doing fine.
Yeah. Well, here's a first principle, and it comes at the question I asked earlier, why is it we progress technologically and not sociologically? Mm. Well, it turns out technology, when I say technology, I mean the physical a part of our being, our cells and our body, the trees, the earth, they're all subject to the laws of physics. Mm. And what I mean by that is subject to them is you can depend on it so that the electromagnetism that holds atoms together works the same way this year as it did last year, or 100 years, or 1,000, or 5,000, or 10, or whatever. That fact allows one generation to learn and record what they learned and allow the next generation to build on it.
Right.
Now, what is it that leaders do? Well, really, they assemble a group of people, not atoms. They assemble a group of people to achieve some purpose. And so you've got this analogy that emerges, which is, okay, if I'm building a product, I can count on the valence of the atoms to hold things together in the right proper way. But what is it that's going to hold people together? So in essence, we've got this analogy going on in the physical realm, because it's so predictable, we keep advancing at amazing rates. And we mm-hmm. will continue to advance. And we've gone nowhere on the sociological side, because we don't have a set of rules we agree on as governing principles.
Yeah.
And that's one of the interesting things about whether people agree that there's a God or not. The benefit of having a God and is that it provides a unifying set of principles for people to relate to each other. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a God, you have the chaos of, well, I guess we'll vote on what's right or wrong. And so whoever has the biggest stick wins. So there's an interesting theological reality of what do I believe is true and is God a source of it? That all being said, the biblical model for building an organization where people hang together, where they can work together constructively, is first you really need to agree on what your purpose is. Hmm. Purpose is a unifying thing. People are designed to want to achieve something, and purpose is the definition of what you want to achieve. So that's where your motivation comes out of that. Now, relationally, this cycle builds on each other, so you have to hear all five pieces. The first part of the cycle is that we have to care about each other, because when I care about you, that opens up, something happens that leads to the next step. If I truly take an interest in your life, not just self-serving, but I want to know who you are, what's important to you, and I care what happens to you, you will be more open with me. You will trust mm-hmm. me. And trust is the second layer. Trust, once we trust each other, then we can expose our differences, expose our different skills, our different beliefs, and do it in an environment where it's not destructive, but it can be constructive. Mm-hmm. Out of that second phase, care leads to trust and openness. The second phase leads to the third phase, which is oneness, or we call it teamwork in today's world. The Bible calls it oneness. And what the word for one is integer. It's the same. It's something that's not divisible except by itself. And so when you form a team, like a football team or a basketball team or a project team at work or a department, you basically, the purpose is the boundary of that team. And if you care for each other and are open with each other, the team can meld together in a way that's not possible any other way. Mm-hmm. So you build a unity that is totally leverages the differences in people, but is integrated in a way that it achieves something that can't be achieved any other way. And there's sort of this mysterious thing about unity. Like if you take hydrogen and you take oxygen, they both have properties that are unique. You put them together and you have something, a set of properties that are completely different. Why?
Right. It's amazing. Something that doesn't blow up. Instead, we end up with something that puts fires out and that we need to survive.
And I think most of us, in the product management world, in the manufacturing world, whatever, we have seen what happens when a diverse team has a really good purpose and that H2O combination occurs and you've got something in the team that is different than any one individual. Mm-hmm. It's that esprit de corps, whatever you want to call it. And it's amazing to watch and when you have it, but it's hard to maintain. Now, the fourth step gets more challenging. Once you have the unity or the oneness, what is it that keeps people in their role? So like if I'm playing a position in a football team or a basketball team, I have to trust that my other teammates are going to do their part and I do mine. If I start worrying about them not doing theirs, I start trying to do their part and then I don't do my part. That alignment and that is an ongoing thing because I wake up today and I feel tired and I don't want to do my job. It's not a oneness is not a one-time thing. It's something that has to be maintained. And that, if you just look at human weakness, we need discipline. We need accountability. We need encouragement. There's a lot of different forms, but we're not like a piece of steel that behaves the same way every day. And A leader has to provide that fourth element, which is a form of accountability and follow through. And I tell a joke, my daughter years ago bought my wife and I a month's worth of fitness coaching.
Okay.
She was worried about me getting old and out of shape and all that, and she was right. And Greg is our fitness coach, and we go there a couple times a week, and we joke that we pay him to make us miserable. And what my wife and I, this is our date. At our age and stage, we look for excitement, and one of our excitements is going to the gym together. We complain all the way there. That's just part of our routine. And then we complain all the way back about how hard it was, and we love the whole thing, you know.
And you provide accountability for each other and encouragement.
If Greg is sick or out of town, we don't go. And we know exactly what he's going to tell us to do. The equipment's
there. Greg provides the accountability.
Greg is the account. I'm paying this guy to tell me to do what I already know to do.
Right.
So you ask about the five steps. The fifth step is being able to take the first four steps and reproduce them in someone else. We call it mentoring. Mm. So if you have an organization that's going to scale, you asked me for a quote I liked, and I've got a different quote, which is, every organization outgrows its own ability to execute. Every organization outgrows its own ability to execute. Thriving organizations and thriving civilizations grow. Growth introduces complexity, and if you cannot reproduce leadership, quality leadership at or ahead of the speed of the growth, you will eventually outgrow your own ability to execute. And you can see it over and over. Civilizations last 400 years. Businesses, you don't see very many businesses that are around for 200 years. And so the fifth element is really the being part. You become a master at understanding the relationships in the first four, and you begin to pour into someone else to understand those relationships so they can repeat it themselves. If you don't do that, the organization will eventually stop growing. It'll stop executing, chaos will prevail, and it'll stop. Long answer, sorry.
No, we want the five steps. I would like to walk through them a little bit more with you and share my reflections on them and get your ideas too, right? So step one and two, I think, are pretty interdependent, right? Caring about each other and building trust with each other. And there was this research project at Google, Project Aristotle, that you may have come across. And they were examining what makes their best virtual teams, at least the aspect that I was paying attention to, was what makes their best virtual teams the best virtual teams, right? What are those teams doing differently? What are the managers of those teams doing differently? And all the normal things we expect in teams to be taking place. But the characteristic that they identified as being different from their normal teams was the capability to create psychological safety. And we've all heard a lot about psychological safety probably in the last decade. But this ability to be able to show up and just be yourself, talk about what you need to talk about, feel like it's the safe place to engage in conversation. And this aspect where we know a little bit more about each other than just the role that we're in and the work we're getting done, right?
I think I heard Tom, was one of your other podcasters, Tom Lang, mentioned that?
I'm sure it has come up a few times. Yeah. So that makes
total sense. I love that phrase. I hadn't heard it until I listened to one of your podcasts.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Because this is important, right? That we actually care about each other. I think it's really helpful if we're going to spend the day working with people that whether it's a virtual or in person, that you're kind of looking forward to seeing some of the people, right? That you like them.
Yes.
If you don't like the people you work with, it is really hard to respect them, and that has other consequences over time, right? And then on to teamwork. So you didn't use the phrase high-performing team, but as you talked about teams, I got that kind of sense, right? That this isn't a group just working towards an objective. It's a collection of people that are doing some of the things you talk about, you know, like in number five, but they're holding each other mutually accountable. They're working towards something that's important. You agree on your purpose and what you're working towards, what it is you want to achieve. And they're, in some, you alluded to conflict, right, on teams and that being a positive thing. and they're engaged with trying to figure out what's the best way to get work done, right? And so that's a really positive conflict that can make the team better. And I think I'm sure I've been on some high-performing teams, because most teams don't get there, right? Most teams, they kind of get to that, there's the Tucker model, right? We call it the normalizing stage, right? And they just figure out how to get the work done, and then they get the work done, and they break up usually as a team and go on and do other things. But some teams go to this extra step where that trust is really high, and there's high accountability, and they're all engaged in producing those results. And there is frequent conflict about the best way to get things done, and it's positive conflict. And some research shows that those teams, depending on the kind of the project environment you're using, whether it's agile or maybe more traditional, can be somewhere between 5 times to 10 times more productive than a normal team, right? Which is just amazing. And I've been on one of those. And hopefully there's a few people listening that were on that team with me at DSA. And it's a magical experience. It's a different sort of thing, right? We did not recognize it until we were done off doing other things. And you're like, wow, that was a special thing. And a lot of us are in organizations where we're not allowed to be on teams long enough to have the opportunity of that happen, right? We're in a matrix organization and the team seems changed. What are your thoughts on trying to get to that point where those teams, the word oneness that you use, that really kind of signifies this too, where those teams are special like that?
Well, it gets into organizational design. If, by the way, I guess we chose not to use the word teamwork because we think I want to differentiate teamwork from oneness. And we separate what's is often thought of as teamwork into two chunks, the oneness and then the sort of the ownership. That's what that fourth stage ownership. And so the oneness part of teamwork, or the teamwork part of oneness is probably a better way to say it, is it's the formation and the alignment around a shared purpose. And again, I can't separate my faith from the way I think. So I just say that to your listeners, whether you believe this or not, God holds in reserve the idea of oneness as a very high standard. And if you look, the evidence of that is there's only a few things in the Bible that are referred to as, quote, one. And God himself refers to himself as one, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He refers to marriage as one, husband and a wife forming a unit. And he refers to nations as one. And he refers to the church as one. And what are the traits of oneness in Scripture? One is that they're not separable. You cannot have what exists in the unity of that oneness if you break it apart. So it's completely indivisible. And something synergistic happens. And you mentioned you've been on one of those teams. It's amazing. It's not 10% better. It's 10 times better.
Right.
And the same thing's true with a marriage. You see marriages that you go through life and, yeah, we're legally married. And then you see marriages where at 90, they're more in love and more one than they were when they were 25. And it's an amazing thing to see and witness. And so to your point, organizational design, you've got to really decide what the purpose of the organization itself is. And like, how does innovation take place? And what's the trade-off between having rapidly deployed teams that then are broken apart? That really is... Right. You have a trade-off. You have a time to market and get a group really together for a short period of time, but you also lose the asset you've built if you dissemble that team and do something else. Right. I'm not saying you don't ever do that. I'm just saying you've got to be aware of the trade-offs because oneness is special.
Yeah, it is. And when agile tools and methodologies came into place and Scrum, there's a underlying principle at the beginning of all that, which is you have a intact team that has experience working with each other. I'm like, huh, well, you give me an intact team that has experience working with each other, I can use any process with that team and that team will overperform other teams, right? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of leveraging things to work in your favor if you're starting with that.
Yeah, you're also, yeah, you, the intact team, you kind of know what somebody else can do and whether they will do. You don't need all the right. red tape to control the functioning, so the efficiency's higher. It's, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, so we, one time we had a, way back, your listeners are too not old enough to remember this, but there was a transition in the industry from character-based interfaces to Windows-based or graphical mm-hmm. interfaces.
Yeah, the GUI. And, yep.
Yeah, the GUI. And we had an accounting system that was graphical or character-based, and for years we were in denial and saying, accountants never going to care about graphical interfaces. All they're just characters. They're just numbers. Who cares? Well, of course, Apple pioneered that. Microsoft finally got Windows 3 out. It created enough of a stir that put a shake in all of us. And so our nearest competitor had the capital to put 100 people on that project, their next generation project. We had just laid off half our staff due to some dumb things I had done and as a CEO. And we could only put 5 people on that project. Hmm. And
this is David and Goliath story.
This is a David and Goliath story, and it leads to one of the biggest learning principles of my life, which is learn to embrace the constraints in your life. Constraints can, if you don't fight them, but embrace them, they can lead to innovation that's unbelievable. And what happened was this team realized they couldn't build much, so they went out and found off-the-shelf components, and we, at the time, Microsoft had just launched Visual Basic as a game. It was just a tool to play with. It was not in their development division. We figured out we could build our interface with Microsoft Visual Basic. And we built our report writer with something else. We shipped within 30 days of the other competitor that had 100 people. And we only ever had 5 on that project. And our company grew 600% in the next 5 years.
Well done. That was a high-performing team.
That was a high-performing team, and the magic formula was they were one, they had one clear purpose, and they were all on the same page of what had to be done.
Right, get it done.
It was a miracle.
So coming up with teams like this are pretty powerful for sure, and the step 4 was your accountability, right, providing accountability and follow-through, and we all need that, and you also, as you talked about that, we show up as humans a little bit different from day to day at times, right? And there's other stuff going on in our lives, and that's back to the psychological safety to just kind of recognize that and be able to talk about those things. But being able to provide the right encouragement and understanding and push, right? And the director of the office, so my boss for my first job, little system engineering company, stayed with them 11 years out of college. I wrote him a note recently about that I appreciate the tough love, the encouragement, the fatherly love. There were different sides of him at times that I needed at different times, right? And early in my career, that was just really helpful that he was there at times when I needed him to hold me up and other times when he needed to tell me to stop screwing around, right?
Yeah, kicking the seat of the pants
that's
in a while.
It, right? Yeah. And he was a very good leader for those things.
That's
and then
gift.
Your step 5 about mentoring. I think that's a great point. I have some experience being mentored and mentoring, and I've seen this in others as well, that we often as mentors, we learn a lot by mentoring, right? It's kind of this thing of, well, we know all this that we're mentoring about, but we're learning more by kind of teaching it to someone else.
I totally agree with that. It's the mystery of doing things right. You think you're doing something for someone, but you actually get more than you give.
Right.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. Mentoring makes you better. It makes you a better mentor. And so it's serving someone else allows you to be served. It's just sort mm-hmm. of a backwards world.
Yeah. And the question comes up, product managers, other roles too, but well, how do I find a good mentor? And I think there's some hesitation to ask people, because we feel like we're imposing on them and the time. But there's no harm in the asking. And a lot of people recognize like, yeah, this is going to be, if I am your mentor, is actually going to end up being good for me too. And so I encourage people listening to ask.
I agree, with the asking. I think that's right. I would also challenge leaders of a group to realize that is part of their role. I mean, I'm not saying it's the complete, they have the only mentoring relationship, but to grow to the point you see the people in your charge as a responsibility to carry, find the ones in those that are ready. Not everybody's ready for the same thing. And who do you spend more time with in your life than your supervisor? I mean, really.
Right.
And so to grow leaders to who realize that's part of their role to invest in the next generation, it's a big responsibility, and it's very rewarding.
Right. Yeah. It's very good. Okay. So we have these five steps to lead us into building this people first sort of culture. They certainly, if we apply them, aspects of them for sure, they're going to help us increase our influence with others. Any suggestions just for where to get started with this, what to do, what to watch out for, tips of wisdom to help us?
Well, this may sound strange, but to sit down and think about this, by the way, this gets into the knowing part. I said no, do, and be. You can't do the being part unless you work on the knowing and the doing. And one of the first things we talk about in knowing is how do you see the person across from you? I mean, what is it that you see when you see another person? Do you actually, and this is where your faith can shape your life. In my worldview, I see someone who's created by God and therefore infinitely valuable. And when I get tempted to be upset with somebody or think less of them or whatever, I have to step back and say, do I really believe that this person is in and of themselves is of high worth? If I work on that dimension of my thinking, then those five steps really get easier.
Yep.
You see what I'm getting at? So you ask, where do you start? I think you start with your attitude about how do you see the people around you? Are they just pieces of machinery, or are they something more than that? And if you do that, the other work kind of comes more naturally. It's easier to care for somebody. And if you care for them, it's easier to be open with them. And the whole thing just begins, you prime the pump.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm drawing a blank on the context for this, but I was recently listening to something. I don't know if it was one of the audiobooks I've been listening to or a podcast episode, but it was a leader giving a similar advice about that, about, you know, you're going to have people that are the star performers working with you, and you're going to have others that are far from it, right? And the thought, the wisdom there was, if I are interacting with people and holding grudges against them or thinking less of them, they're going to notice that over time in my interactions, and it's going to be visible. Yeah. And as a leader, I can't afford that. As a leader, I have to help people push forward towards our mission, towards our purpose. And so I have to treat everyone as a star performer and not hold grudges or anything like that, because we're just trying to move forward. And how you think about the people you work with impacts how you treat them, whether you're conscious about it or not.
I think that's very, very well said. Yeah, people want to win in life, but sometimes their behaviors betray them, and I want to get caught up in their behaviors instead of thinking about, well, what underneath, they're just like me. They want to win. They just maybe don't know how.
Right.
And I get all wrapped up in their behaviors rather than, well, what can I do to help them understand what they're trying to really want in the life, and then how can I help them get there? They might be in the wrong job. And that's a gift. It's a gift to do that hard thing. I was listening to you or one of your earlier podcasts is laying people off. And there can be different reasons to do that. There can be economic reasons, but I've laid off people because they weren't right for our company. And it's sort of lying to people to say, well, just put in your time. We'll keep paying you because you need money, when they're wasting their life not being in the right place. And that's not love. Mm-hmm. Letting somebody stay in a job that they don't belong in is not love. So,
looking out for the best interests of others. It's important.
Yeah.
Okay. So lots of good things to think through, some deep topics there. I appreciate your biblical perspective on finding wisdom and applying that to the business world as well. I asked you to bring us a quote. We do like innovation quotes around here. What did you bring and what does it mean to you?
Well, the quote I brought was rooted in something I hear people talking about all the time, chaos. And the biblical idea of chaos is that we're not meant to be victims of chaos. We're designed actually to be victors over chaos. So victims versus victors when it comes to chaos. And the first thing to do to overcome chaos is go think more deeply about purpose. That is how you win over chaos, is by narrowing your purpose.
And know where we're going, know what we're doing, know why that matters. Right. Yeah. And it ties in back to your three dimensions, and I have them in my notes, but the know, do, and be, right? Know who you are, know what you're doing, know what you want to be. Okay. I like the quote. Thank you very much. What makes this interview work for you, right? How can people find out about the work that you do, the books that you have, anything else you want to share?
Sure. Most everything's on our website, leadfirst.ai. I've written three books, but the latest one is really my most revealing because I spent 50 years, I'm in my fifth decade of a CEO-ness here, not quite, 40-some years. And the last book is about, I'm a business guy and I'm an engineer, but it's also the journey I've learned about integrating faith into business life. And I think the book, in retrospect, was really written for me because it allowed me to distill four decades worth of learning. And as I read it, I said, oh, yeah, I should have gotten that lesson earlier. So it was, anyway, go to our website, leadfirst.ai. It's all there. Okay.
Leadfirst.ai will find it. I also put a link to the Amazon book there as well to make that easy for people. And since you said you kind of written for yourself, I suspect then that you kind of are hoping that kids, grandchildren, I don't know, might pick this up too, right?
Yes, absolutely. My partner and I, we sold a business to Great Plains and then to Microsoft years ago. And so we've started use some of that capital to form other businesses, and we're trying to get an intergenerational activity going on. So it's a lot of fun trying to transmit this culture.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as we get older, we start thinking about what we can leave for the next generation or generations.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a good work that you created to help with that. So Gary, thank you so much for being with us and helping us learn more about creating a people-first culture.
Thank you, Chad, for what you're doing. You're real close to 500 episodes, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's been a good journey. And listeners, if you want to find the article version of everything we just discussed and insights from Gary, you'll find that at productmasterynow.com/501. Also, I do fund this podcast through the training that I do. That's for product managers and product leaders. There's three programs available. The first one is for helping product managers really get rounded out, prepare for the next level of their career, and also prepares you for a professional certification through PDMA, Independent International Organization, for us. And then the second one is for people moving into a leadership role for innovation. And often product managers gravitate towards that direction, so it's a good fit. And that also prepares you for a professional certification with AIPMM. And then the third one is for senior leaders, letting them understand how leading the organization and leading innovation is different and how they need to, some new skills that we need to know to help lead innovation. So appreciate you checking those out. There's something where regardless of where you are in your career, something that will really help you get ready for the next level of your career. That information is at productmasterynow.com, and you'll see a list of that. As always, everyone, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.